Okay, hello there. Welcome all into the MO podcast. You're here with me, Consummation San, and my lovely co-host,
Shreya.
And today we're going to be talking about
Ed Gein,
the lampshade guy.
There's a lot to unpack here, and literally his name is probably the most PG bit we're going to talk about, I'll be honest with you. Bit of background, just in case you don't know who he is. Basically inspired Anthony Perkins' character in Psycho, Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He was nicknamed the Plainfield Ghoul, Plainfield being where they lived. He was born in 1906. He had a dad who was an alcoholic loser, according to his mother, Augusta, who was a very militant Lutheran.
Aren't they always?
I know, this is it. I mean, we talked about Ed Kemper and how he was a little bit of a mummy's boy, but wow!
Why do they all have mummy issues? We got another one.
Yeah, I didn't think it could get any worse, if I'm honest.
Oh, for real.
So, yeah, basically what happened was his mother brought him up. His father couldn't hold down a job because he was an alcoholic and a loser, pretty much. So Augusta, his wife, claimed. Basically, when he was born, Augusta was running a grocery shop in La Crosse, which is in between Michigan and Milwaukee, I believe, if memory serves. And she was quite good at the breadwinning. And in 1914, they earned enough money to move into a 195-acre farm. And that she moved them 110 miles away because she wanted to keep them safe, the boys safe, from the immorality and the sinners of the city.
Basically, just any girl. Ever.
Yeah, all girls were whores, apart from her, obviously.
Yeah, apart from her.
The sins of lust and carnal desire is what she wanted to protect them from, which she did. She did a damn good job, to be quite honest. She must have earned quite a bit of money because I was looking at 195 acres. It's massive.
It was a bit of a massive farmhouse, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for context, an acre is 60% of a football field, or if you're in America, soccer field. So it's just over half of that. So 195 of them, it's pretty much tells you that like, it's the arse end of nowhere because there's that much land to be bought.
Think of how much money they would have made if they'd sold it all. Jeez.
Yeah. They didn't make much money working it.
No, they didn't. And I think the house was actually described as like your pretty average. If there was a haunted house in a movie, it would be that house as well. But I don't know whether or not that was the description of it after Ed lived there by himself or when his mum lived there. Because you'd like to think his mum, being so prim and proper and religious, she probably kept it nice.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, as well, the... It was the rooms were kept pristine after mm-hmm. she died, obviously. But they were pristine when the crime scene investigators came in. They were boarded up. But we'll get into that. Basically, Augusta, who was the mother, she kept the two boys. Ed had a brother Henry, who was 7 years older, away from women. If Ed ever made any friends at school, he'd get chastised about it, and from his mother, she'd tell him that they're going to lead you down a dark path. So he was a very introvert kind of person. He was a bit effeminate. He had some kind of like weird ways. He'd just start laughing from nowhere. So in the main, most people kept away from him, which was a good thing, as the future would predict.
Yeah, turns out he didn't need friends to lead him down a dark path.
No, he just needed a very stern mother. They grew up. He was, Ed was quite proficient at reading in the 30s, or the 20s and 30s, I suppose. That's like A-star material if you can read. Live on a farm, you can read, that's it. Wow, president. They worked as handymen in Plainfield as they got older, and Ed worked as a babysitter. He said he enjoyed being around kids rather than adults because he was more on their level, apparently.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and they were both trustworthy and reliable, according to people. There was nothing untoward. I mean, it's that famous one, like, oh, he wouldn't say boo to a goose, and then that's what all the neighbours say. But, obviously, no one ever goes, oh, he's a right one. Ooh, ooh, I've seen him. Seen him at night with his sewing machine. Ooh.
I mean, he was kind of described... He was described as the town oddball, wasn't he? But then at the same time, people were, like, letting him babysit their kids. So how, on what kind of oddball level are we talking here?
Yeah. I mean, I think... I really don't know, but I think he was more simple than anything else. In the pictures that I've seen of him, he's kind of... I don't want to say simple people all look the same, but he's kind of got a puzzled look.
And the, yes, he does.
These are pictures that are being taken by reporters after all this is broke. It's not when he was posing as school, but there's all this stuff going on around him. He's been accused of all these horrible things, and he's got an air of him that he doesn't really understand what's going on and why it's going on.
Yeah.
I was going to say it makes you feel sorry for him, but it really doesn't. What do we think happened to Henry?
I definitely think he killed his brother.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Everything about it, what happened was there was a fire at their farm, and both boys... When I was reading this, I thought it was boys. Like, I thought they were, like, early 20s or something.
Yeah, yeah. But no, they were grown men.
Henry was 44 when he died. Like, yeah. So they were both still living at home. They didn't have much of a social life outside of this. And literally, when I was first reading it, it played out like, oh, either children or young adolescents.
Yeah.
That when this happened. But then I looked at the dates and I was like, hang on a minute. That's middle-aged men that this happened to. So basically what happened, there was a fire, both boys went to try and put out the fire, because it was very close to the farm. Nightfall was descending, the boys got split up, and the men got split up, and Ed got separated from Henry, and then as darkness fell, he couldn't find him, apparently, so he went to organise a search party. The search party turned up. The first place Ed took them was to the dead body of his brother.
How bizarre.
Indeed. Like, what? Did he have, like, intuition or something? If they were twins, you'd go, yeah, it's that mind thing in it that they're linked. But no.
Very suspicious.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. He had bruises on his head. And the ground that he laid on was untouched by fire, so...
Yeah. And I don't think Ed had the smarts enough. Like, I don't think he was, like, compass mentis enough to even know that what he was doing was suspicious. Like, leading them straight to the body. I don't think he was smart enough to actually deduce, they might actually suspect me from doing this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. I just think because Henry was bad-mouthing his mother, he wanted to get away. He'd met a divorced, even worse, mother of two, and he wanted to start his own life, and I think his mother wasn't happy, and she got into Ed's head. Henry started bad-mouthing the mother. Ed went, no, you can't do that, and just murdered him.
I agree. I totally do agree with that, yeah. Without a doubt.
Even after all the evidence that they can see with their own two eyes, the coroner said no, Henry asphyxiated. It was death by asphyxiation. And everybody moved on. So that was in 1944. Their father, George, had already passed on. He died of a heart attack in 1940. So now it was just Ed and Augusta living on the farm.
Do you think that's what he wanted? that maybe that's why he took Henry out. Maybe he had some kind of Oedipus complex, like he wanted his mum all to himself, as opposed to as well as Henry was bad mouthing her. Maybe he didn't want to share her.
Yeah, it was. I think it was everything all in one. I don't even know. Would he have thought this is an opportunity to get rid of him now, or whether Henry had been bad mouthing her earlier in the day, and this has happened, and he was still raged up? But it was just an opportune time for it to happen. They had a glorious year together. And then, unfortunately, because it caused all this, so it is unfortunate.
Yes.
Augusta passed away in December of 1945, so less than a year after his brother had died, his mother passed on and he's left all alone.
And she had a couple of strokes before she died as well, which meant that he was caring for her 24/7, which is really, if there's just the pair of you in the middle of nowhere, in the arse end of nowhere, and it's just the two of you, and you are the sole carer, that's quite an intimate relationship, really, isn't it?
It is.
Things you have to do, like, you know, take people to the toilet and bath them and things like that. I'm assuming he had to do all of that for his mother. That's probably, I feel like it might have exacerbated an already complicated relationship, or what he, I don't think he quite understood women in general, because his mum kept them away from him. So I feel like maybe he had a bit of a confused view on what a normal mother-son relationship should have been.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And if she's had a stroke, she's immobile, and, you know, maybe he starts learning the female ways while she's immobile. I mean, we don't know, but it's a long time, and he wanted to be alone with her, like you say. And somebody, one of his biographers said, lost his only friend and one true love when she passed away. So
yeah.
He really didn't have any idea about women, what love was, what a relationship was, what anything was, really. So now he is all alone. This is where it gets shenanigans.
Yeah, I think the loss of his mum just made something in him just snap. It was a bit of a dodgy line he was walking anyway, but I think this just tipped him right over the edge. He was devastated. Apparently at the funeral, he was like howling like a small baby, like a small child would at the loss of his mum. And
wow.
He just went hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like that kind of fits in with being a little bit childlike and simple, doesn't it? Really, you just can't filter his emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was just far too attached.
Yeah, I don't think he knew how to live without her, did he?
No. He boarded up all the rooms, the main rooms that she used in the house, and it was a two-story. Big farmhouse, this, from the pictures, and he just used the kitchen and lived in a room that was a utility cupboard, really, that was off the kitchen that he turned into a bedroom. Very odd. I mean, I like my mum, but I wouldn't go that far, you know. It's just chin up and move on.
It was almost like he was making a shrine to her, wasn't it? Like he wanted everything left exactly as it was, and it was like a little, I think it was like a little bit of a shrine kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think he could move on at all from that. And maybe he just had her in his head walking round. The reason he was boarding up these rooms is she was still in that room. As long as he didn't go in and ruin the kind of fantasy that he had, she was still there, she was still alive. He could kind of cope with it. But
And for a dude only living in one room, he could have kept it a bit cleaner, couldn't he?
Oh!
One room, it's one room!
I tell you what, right? If you've got OCD and you're listening to this and you think, oh, I'll have a look at the pictures, don't. Just don't, right? because he did things that we'll talk about in a bit that are just horrific. And the thing that has upset me most is the state of the rooms that were there. I mean...
Yeah, yeah. Unclean, dusty, cluttered. He was a hoarder. It's just don't. If you have OCD, just don't. We can't unsee this, and it has traumatized us more than the rest of the stuff that he did.
Yeah, this is the worst part of the story. I mean, they didn't have Dysons back then, but come on, they must have had a brush or something. A duster.
You'd think
God.
So.
Oh, I'd hate to look at his skirting boards. Oof.
Or down his toilet.
Oh God! Oof. Oh God! Don't. Oof. So yeah, he wasn't a clean man. But his mum's died and he's not trying to move on, but he's still doing little jobs around the around Plainfield. He's still doing his babysitting, he's still doing his handyman work, and he makes a little bit of money and manages to keep the farm going and keep himself to himself, which is what was, I suppose, maybe not a good thing, but if someone would have noticed. But he had people round. This is the thing. So what I've read is there was at least, I'm not going to say children, but three adolescents that went round to his property and saw what were shrunken heads that his cousin had sent him from the Philippines.
Right.
So this is how he explained it away. So he said, "Oh yeah, my cousin was fighting in the war, and he was in the south, and they were shrinking heads, and he sent me them." And because
who's his cousin, Indiana Jones?
I know. it's just bizarre. But because he was an oddball, maybe people just thought, "Oh, he's just Ed. Let's leave him." Time goes on. He spent his time reading books because he was really a proficient reader. But then he started reading about death cults and Nazi atrocities and cannibals. So it wasn't really focused in the right areas, should we say. We'll fast forward to 1956 when Bernice Warden, who ran a local hardware store, was disappeared. Ed had been in the night before trying to buy a gallon of antifreeze. God knows what he needed it for. I'm sure it's a preserving kind of thing that you use antifreeze for, but there you go.
Or it was his poor attempt at a chat up line, like, "Hey, Bernice, I need some antifreeze for my truck out there. Can I get whatever the biggest one that is going to take the longest amount of time for you to fetch out the back so I can check out your ass?"
I don't think any man ever has said that, but okay.
I've never worked in a hardware store, so I might get a job just to see, though.
Just to see you try and work it out.
Yeah, but you can keep that one if you want to use it.
Oh, I will. I'll put that in my quiver. I'll tell you. next time I'm at B&Q.
I have a gallon of antifreeze, sweetheart?
They're on the shelf, dickhead. Right, why are you bothering me? Anyway, he tries to hit on Bernice and... basically, he says, "Right, she didn't have it in stock." So he said, "Right, I'll be back." So the next morning, he goes round, collects the antifreeze, and shoots her in the head, and puts her in the back of his car and drives her to his farm. Now, her son was a deputy in the local sheriff's department. So he saw Ed the previous evening hanging round the store. Now, whether hanging round or whether he was buying something, I don't know. But the last sales receipt she wrote on the morning of a disappearance was for a Mr. Ed Gein. And they had his address, so they went, "You know what, we'll just pop round and see what's going on round there."
So they went round, everywhere seemed pretty shut down, like there was nobody in, but they went back round into the barn, and when they went in, one of the guys described what he thought was, you know, like in butcher shops when they have like cattle and stuff like strung up on hooks, like, you know, gutted, ready for being sold. He thought that that's what it was. He thought it was like a deer or a cattle or something like that in like a butcher kind of environment. No, it turns out it was beneath. And she was just strung up, you know, kind of spread eagled. It was all a bit horrific. And they thought, perhaps we should have a look around the rest of the house because this is well dodgy. I think that was a direct quote. This is well dodgy.
I can imagine. Can imagine them saying that. A sheriff. I mean, they're not in the south, but this is well dodgy. This.
So they go into the house, and it turns out Ed has been. He couldn't cope with the loneliness. But at the same time, he didn't know how to talk to women, so he kind of made his own company, and he'd been exhuming corpses from the local graveyard for ages. He would check the obits in the paper, find out when the bodies were going to be buried, and then he would go, like, the next day and dig it up and bring it home. And they found a head in a box that had been there, a lady that had gone missing 2 or 3 years prior. They found her head in a box. He'd stripped skin off people. He made what they called a mammary vest, which was basically just a boob vest, and he would wear it and pretend to be a woman. He had the skin stripped from faces. He'd flayed the skin off the faces of some of the bodies, and he'd made them into masks, so essentially he could wear a woman's suit, very much in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre style Leatherface deal.
It kind of looked like he was trying to start an Etsy shop or something, because he had masks, like you say, he had the masks, he had a belt made with female nipples, he had bowls made from human skulls, and a lampshade made from the skin of a human face. So, yeah, he liked his sewing.
He did. He upholstered some good chairs.
Yeah, I mean,
I bet they stank though. Preparation.
Yeah, he did all this, but he couldn't be bothered to run a duster around. I mean,
he was too busy sewing.
Indeed, yeah. Oh God,
this took over his life.
God, I've got to make me belt tonight. Oh, what am I going to go out with without that? I mean, Jesus, what'll hold my pants up when I'm down the bar? And really, this is even the worst thing. The worst thing, not even the worst thing, but because the worst thing obviously is the untidiness. But the worst thing is, he had a shoebox full of vulvas. I'm sure you shouldn't be keeping them in shoebox.
I would say that's not normal behaviour. No.
No. No. But not at all.
But I mean, he was grossly unfamiliar with, you know, the female anatomy. Why was he how did he know what they were?
This is what is so bizarre, because apparently he was too squeamish to go deer hunting. this is one of the things, because I thought when I was reading this, oh yeah, so he's living out there, he's got a meagre existence. Maybe he goes hunting in the woods, that's the way he keeps his subsistence, you know, he shoots some squirrels, some deers or whatnot. But apparently, he was too scared to go deer hunting. He didn't like the blood, he didn't like anything to do with it. But he trussed up Bernice like an expert butcher would do.
Yeah, he did.
And had a, yeah, he had some incisions there.
He did.
Yeah, he cut her from the shoulder blades all the way down at the stomach to the top of the, let me use the technical term, the mons veneris, which is kind of like just above your bits. And
technical
then,
term, just above your bits.
Yeah. He disemboweled her and cut out a vulva, vagina, anus and lower rectum.
Why? Unless he was planning on, you know, selling her, you know, like, I don't know, cutting her up into steaks and loins and maybe, you know, cut all the awful crap out and then... Do you think he was eating people?
I don't know, because he's kind of, if you look at some of the research that it pulls up, it does come like as tagged as cannibalism and necrophilia. But there's not really any evidence of it. Well, I mean, obviously, if you don't see it, you've only got to take his word for it, because there's bits of missing pieces, obviously. And but he said he wasn't banging the corpses because they smelled too bad, and that's a scientific term, that, banging.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did also, after his mother died, want a sex change. So basically, like you said, he had a mammary shirt and he kind of wore it, and maybe he, I don't know how to say this, but he put on the vulvas in some kind of way or form. Maybe he had one attached to a belt and just let it dangle. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, dear God.
Maybe like a G-string going up.
Oh, with, lordy, with a nipple belt.
Yeah, he held it up with a nipple belt. And,
God.
Yeah, I really...
You know in Psycho, when Norman Bates is dressing up as his mum, but he doesn't really realise it, he's got this split personality because he can't deal with the loss of his mother. Do you think that... I know that's how they're kind of... Ed was the inspiration for that, but do you think that might have actually been the case? Do you think that was just his way of dealing, that he actually did develop some kind of split personality, or do you think that was just fictionalised for the movie?
I don't know, because there's two, like, schools of thought, if you want to put it that way, that he either hated women because he didn't understand them, and that's why all the bodies that he dug up from the graves were older, mature ladies that reminded him of his mum. So it was either he hated women and he wanted to get back at his mum because they reminded him of her, so he cut out their bits and whatnot, or he wanted to be his mum after he lost his mum. He wanted to kind of... He couldn't go on being himself, so he wanted to become her. And this was the way to make the booby suit and the vulva G-string. So it's like, which one is it? I just think he didn't understand women at all, and he wanted his mother around. All he knew was his mum. And he kind of wanted her around. This is why he went for people who were that age and had that kind of look to them. They were more matronly, more motherly. But cutting their faces off and putting them on and pretending he was them.
I guess if he had, like, mirrors in his house or something, he could put these faces on, and maybe might feel a bit like he's got company over, like he's pretending that he's not on his own, he's got these women here. But at the same time, unless he read, you know, anatomy books or something, he's never, well, to what we understand, he's never had a sexual relationship with a woman. He's never been intimate with a woman. How did he know he doesn't have a vulva? What's his fascination with vulvas?
Exactly. I don't...
He's never cut any men up to know that they don't have them. So I'm not sure the fascination. Do you know, I don't get it.
That's it as well, because, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm sure maybe when they were kids and it was bath time, him and his brother shared a bath, so
yeah.
He would have saw his brother had the same thing he had, a penis.
Mm-hmm.
But if he wasn't intimate with, how would you not know that that's what they have?
Exactly.
I had a bloody awful shock my first time, I tell you. I was like, what's that? What do I do with it? Why is it winking at me?
So we're saying that, do you think that because he wasn't allowed any contact with women growing up, all he knew was his mum, then his mum dies, and then he kind of gets this Now he's free, so he can be with a woman if he wants, but now he's got this confusion and there's a merger between sex and death.
Yeah, yeah. He obviously, because the only female he's known has died, so he's got that in his head. And I don't think he doesn't look like he has the social skills. Well, he certainly didn't from what his classmates and his teachers have said. He was a very effeminate, very strange little boy. Obviously, he probably grew into a very effeminate and strange adult. He was a town oddball, so even if he approached a woman, I mean, he wouldn't know where to go, what to do. So I think the only kind of woman he could get was a dead woman, kind of. I think that's kind of how it worked in his own head. And he didn't need anything more than that for himself.
Even though he clearly had some form of social skills, because if he didn't have any, nobody would be trusting him with their kids, would they? There's some random bloke knocking on your door going, "Can I babysit your kids?" But, he just shut the door in his face. He must have had some social skills, presumably with women, because, you know...
Mothers of women.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, he must... I just don't know. I mean, obviously, I kind of do know where he went wrong down the line.
Yeah.
But it's just... There's a massive, massive difference to be being told you're going to go to hell and women are whores and they're all evil, and going to a cemetery and digging up a woman and cutting out her bits and pieces.
Which you would think would have been instilled in him as well, that you can't desecrate a grave because then you'll go to hell again. So it was okay for him. He'd be like, no, I'm not going to sleep with a woman because all women are whores and spawns of the devil and I don't want to go to hell, but I'm going to dig up this corpse on consecrated ground.
It's completely bizarre, isn't it?
How
he made this leap in wrong and right, whereas, I mean, in fairness, Augusta did... read them the bad part of the Bible, but the one where God was pissed off, the Old Testament, and she did read him like Sodom and Gomorrah and tales about retribution, and she did beat that into him. But obviously, it's 40 years of reading Bible passages. Surely at some point, thou shall not kill came up, or... I mean, I don't know if it's in the Bible, but thou shall not dig up a body. I mean...
I'm fairly sure thou shalt not make nipple belts is in there somewhere as well.
It's got to be. It's got to be on the first page, Jesus. God. I mean, it was the mindset at the time that desecrating graves is bad.
Yeah. So he must have been so, so desperate for... He must have been so lonely... that he just thought, you know what, I'm going to risk it for a biscuit. If I go to hell, I go to hell. I'll go in a fast car and I'll dig up this corpse. But I'm not going to go so far as to sleep with it. I would if it wasn't all stanky, but it is, so I'm not going to.
Didn't have the breeze back then, did they?
This is true, yeah. Or air fresheners, yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, well, Ed didn't he? Jesus Christ. Not in his house, God in heaven.
It probably wouldn't have smelled quite as bad if he, you know, hadn't basically IKEA'd his house out with skin.
Do you know what? Maybe that was it. It was the actual house and not the corpses that stank.
Yes.
Just because he couldn't be arsed cleaning. Maybe that was it. Jesus.
What did he do with the rest of the corpses then? So he cut the bits off to make various lampshades and furniture and stuff. What about the rest of the corpse, though?
So he didn't take whole corpses at a time. He only took bits and pieces. Like, I read that he had an assistant called Gus who helped him with digging the corpses up. And the reason that he went to killing is because Gus was put in a home in 1954. So he couldn't help out anymore. So that's why he couldn't do it on his own. So he went and killed people.
So what did Gus get out of it? Was he a bit of a necro?
Must have just been a driver, or no, no, maybe he got a souvenir. I really don't know. But yeah, he only took actual bits and pieces, because when he was explaining this to the police, and going back to the split personality thing, he did say he went to graveyards like 40 times between this time period, but only on 10 occasions he didn't. Like 30 occasions, he didn't take anything, but on 10 occasions, he was in a daze-like state. And then literally got back home and woke up the next morning, and there's a body sat in the chair looking at him.
I mean, I imagine it's... I've never done it myself, but I imagine it's pretty hard going, digging a grave up, to then be selective to open the coffin and go, oh, I don't like her, and close it again and fill it back in. I mean...
No. So the thing was, he didn't do any digging in the 30 times. He was just having a walk round a graveyard, as you do, at night. Apparently, I mean, obviously I weren't there, but this is kind of what he was saying. He was in a fugue state on some of the occasions that he actually did dig them up. And I think he actually only took one whole body. In the other times, he either took their heads or their bottom bits or their nipples for his belt, obviously.
You know, like in Weird Science, do you think he was trying to build a Lisa?
I think that was his way to cope with it, because he said he wanted a sex change, whether... he wanted to crawl back into his mother by this, but he was definitely trying to create a suit that he could wear where he would think he was a woman. Oof. I mean, they weren't as woke as we are today, I suppose, so...
It's a little bit more complicated than just skinning some boobs off a woman.
Of course. I mean, yeah, as far as I know, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. And there's a massive reason. Because yes. People would look at you and go, he's wearing a booby shirt. What's happening there?
Right, why is he wearing a vest made of boobs and a belt made of nipples? Yeah. That guy's a bit odd.
Yeah, that's a nice belt. Whoa, no, it's not. Can milk it. What's wrong with it?
Where did you get that belt? For Etsy. Oh. Actually, in doing the research, I did actually come across some stores on Etsy that are actually selling not actual lampshades made out of human skin, but like tongue-in-cheek kind of, and it is all Ed Gein-inspired chairs made out of human skin, in quotations, and lamps made out of human skin. There's a pair of high-heeled shoes that look like they're made out of human skin. Oh, they're awful. I would like... I probably... wear them to a wedding or something just to see what people would do.
I saw a pair of Converse trainers.
Really?
Yeah, that were like, they were brown. You could they were trying to be tan skin kind of thing, but there was a stitch mark up and you can like see a little bit of a, not an eye, but an eye hole kind of thing on it. They didn't look good, but...
Oh, did they? I got a bit excited there.
Yeah, no, I mean, by all means, have a look, but I wouldn't wear them if I... I mean, to be honest with you, if they were skin, you'd hope that they were waterproof, but...
Definitely, yeah.
You never know, Converse, innit? but, yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't feel sorry for him, but... I just think he was lost in the world. And without his mum there, she weren't there to tell him what's right and what's wrong. And like you say, he was lonely and he had issues. He did have major issues. He had schizophrenia. He was diagnosed with that. And he was also a sexual psychopath. I mean, I don't like the word psychopath because I think it's a lazy word that people use to describe someone who does horrible things and you just can't comprehend what they do. But I think as well, it was 1957 when his trial was. And do you think, because one of the things is that he wanted to have a sex change, he wanted to be his mother or whatever it was. Do you think they thought he was insane because of that? It was like, you're a man. Why? How? Sex changes, what are they? No one knows.
Yeah, they wouldn't have even understood the psychology of what he could have been thinking. I don't even think that it even entered their heads that maybe he was just so, he just couldn't cope without his mom. I don't think it even entered their heads. I think it was just, he's a psycho who's done these horrible things to these, well, two women, actually. There was only two confirmed victims, wasn't there? And yeah, he must be nuts. Let's lock him away and throw away the key. I don't think it ever dawned on them at this period in time that people do usually have some sort of reason for doing these things. It doesn't just, somebody doesn't just wake up one day and go, oh, I just feel like wearing some people's skin today and wearing somebody else's face. That's not, there's always a reason behind why these guys do it. And I just don't think at the time that they really wanted anything to do with why or the hows and the psychology. It was just a case.
It was a horrible thing that they've done, that he's done. They just saw the horror of it all rather than anything else behind it.
Like you say, like I don't feel sorry for him, but at the same time, how lost and alone and scared he must have been purely because he was so isolated for his whole life. And yeah, it probably, I mean, everybody has a breaking point. It just depends on how you deal with that breaking point afterwards. But I guess he just didn't know how to cope, did he? He didn't know how to deal with it.
He was sentenced in 1968. Obviously, in 1957, he was insane and they couldn't try him. But in 1968, he was sane enough to stand trial, which, this is a weird thing. He was sane enough to stand trial, but he was found guilty of first-degree murder. But he was legally insane, so they couldn't give him the death penalty or send him to prison.
Which makes zero sense.
Yeah, which is really strange. He was saying, I think they just wanted to have him in a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, he was only charged, he was only found guilty of first-degree murder of one murder because it was too expensive to try the both of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the second killing, by the way, was Mary Hogan, who was a local bar owner where he frequented occasionally. And he did go out. He was known around Plainfield as well.
Yeah.
But it's really weird. So in 1968, he was sent to the mental hospital and he died in 1984. They never had a problem with him.
Yeah, he was apparently a model patient, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was one of the only people there not to need medication for psychotic episodes. He was the only thing, I say the only thing, I mean, it's not very me too, but the female staff who worked there were a bit put off when he looked at them in a strange way. That's the only thing that I could find that he actually did.
Probably wondering what they would look like as a suit.
Probably, but the thing is, He never acted on it. I mean, there's no reports of him attacking anyone or anything like that. So, do you just think he needed structure in his life, like to be around people, and it was the loneliness that got to him?
Definitely. If he didn't need any medication and he didn't have any violent episodes when he was in the hospital, yeah, I would say he probably kind of was not happy, but I guess he found some sort of peace in being where he knew people understood that he needed help and that they were actually helping him, whether he deserved it or not. They were actually, he was where he needed to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't lonely. He could play checkers with the other suit-wearing people.
Exactly. I don't want to say an anomaly, but he's like, you look at Ed Kemper and you see from his childhood, obviously, okay, he had mummy issues as well, but he killed the cat. He was he hated women because he projected his mother onto him, whereas Ed, I think he loved his mother and he projected his mother onto these people and he didn't have to kill to get a sense of power. It was just to get a sense of companionship.
Yeah, It seemed like all the other murders were either because of rage or because of lust, or they had some kind of really strong negative emotional attachment, whereas Ed Gein's seemed to just be a coping mechanism for loneliness and sadness.
I mean, they didn't have counselling back then, I suppose.
First step on the road to recovery, Ed. Get a dust around, get them skirting boards clean.
Busy hands, I tell you what, busy hands keeps the devil away. Even with a clean
Somebody's
more.
Channeling their mother.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, but yeah, if he would have got a duster out, he would have been busy, he would have been contented, and then he could have looked back and gone, oh, I did that.
Look at this pristine house. Stepford me, that's what I am.
Look at them dido rails, they're lovely.
Gleaming. But I mean, if he did go out, clearly he went out to bars and he was kind of well known around the area. It's weird that he felt so alone. Like, it's weird that he felt like all he had was his mother when all he had to do was go down the pub and there was people there who knew him that would talk to him. He didn't need to be alone. It's weird that he felt like he had to be. Yeah. It's weird that he felt that he was.
Yeah, I think it's more the maternal loneliness, do you know, of being constantly someone around. You know, when you're living with someone and you, even though they're not in, you know they're going to be in at some point.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're on your own, it's one of them. It's like, can I be asked going out tonight, or am I going to stay in? And then you stay in, you're like looking at the walls going, this is dull.
Gonna
go and make me a lampshade out of someone's face.
I mean, as opposed to, he could have actually, I guess it's all just how you see something, isn't it? After a tragedy happens, he could have seen it as, oh, you know, my mum has basically kept me a single Pringle for my entire life. Now, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get me some booty calls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as well, but according to some of the psychologist reports as well, he didn't realise what he did was so serious. He was amazed at all the fuss that the court case caused. He didn't take any responsibility of it. Again, it was kind of like someone else's fault. If the neighbour would have come to see him a bit more, he kind of tried to deflect it. He's not clever enough, like Kemper was, to apportion blame to someone else because he doesn't want to take blame. I just think he genuinely thought if someone would have reached out to him, none of this would have happened. I think that was his genuine thought process, rather than it's not that he was taking ownership of it. I just think he was really, really simple.
Yeah, it seemed a bit like he didn't quite understand the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah, and then if obviously, I mean, if you know, you never go to that friend's house, the one that's got the crazy mother. So
yeah,
maybe that's what happened with his childhood. None of his friends came around. If he stayed out with friends, if he made friends, he got shouted at. So he took that on, and then by the time you're grown up, you're 20 or not, that all comes with you, especially when you're in this small community and everything. And, there's Ed, he's good for babysitting, but that's about it, kind of thing. He was a right one. He was.
But it was an anomaly, like you say. He doesn't fit you. Your usual, your normal serial killer profile.
Exactly. There's nothing that you can look at in this case and go, yeah. Maybe his mother being a bit harsh on him, and that you can see, okay, maybe you'd go on a killing spree or something. You know, so maybe he'd snap one day, but you wouldn't ever in a million years go, he's got a box of vulvas in.
No.
But he definitely an anomaly. He was I think he's well under the IQ threshold. He was too squeamish, to cruelty to animals. I mean, I don't know if he wet the bed, but he wasn't a bad kid. He didn't have a chance to be a bad kid, or else his mother would have twatted him, I suppose. But
didn't really seem like there was any kind of early warning signs for what he could potentially be when he grew up. I think maybe it was just his mother's death that just snapped.
It was a straw that broke it, and then he just couldn't live in a world without her, and the loneliness got to him, and then boom. Yeah, he was, and it was quite interesting because he wasn't actually a serial killer. He, like you said, he only killed two people.
Two. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it, you
I
got
say
a
only
three,
two, but yeah.
Yeah, three or more. Yeah. So yeah. Right, yeah. So that was the story of Ed Gein. He killed people and he did horrible, horrible things, but I think he was just an unfortunate soul that was. He didn't have a chance to begin with, really, with his mum, and he was kind of destined to be a wrong un, but no one would have ever seen how wrong.
No, maybe a wrong un in the sense of, you know, he held up a liquor store or something and went to jail, but not like this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's it as well. There's no history of any minor brushes with the law or anything like that. He was on the straight and narrow, he was a good boy, did everything his mum told him, and then just like that, boom. Right, thank you very much. That was the MO Podcast with me, Contumacious Anne, and my co-host,
Atreya.
Bye.
Bye.